Hello, this is Bare Naked Politics, the podcast for people who don't like politics podcasts. I'm Julia Bell, and today, I want to talk to you about Joe Biden winning the American presidential election. I know this has been a contested issue. People are very confused about it because there's lawsuits and there's recounts and there's allegations of fraud. But Joe Biden's name has been called as the projected winner of this election. And if we're going by the rules of every other election, then Biden's your winner. Biden's your guy. So in this episode, I'm going to explain what happened because it's been a debacle. And it's gone on for 5 days. I genuinely forgotten what it feels like to be outside because I've just been watching CNN. So I am going to explain it in a nice succinct way so you feel like, you know, if you missed any of it, you've got a handle of it. I'll strip it all back so it makes sense. I won't use any jargon, or if I do, I'll explain what I'm on about. So let's crack on. So how did we end up with Joe Biden as the president-elect? That's the fancy term for the guy who's going to be the president come Inauguration Day in January. So remember, Americans use this voting system called the Electoral College, where, and I talked about that at length in the last episode of the podcast, so it's really worth a listen if you didn't get around to that. But the Electoral College is basically where each state is worth a different amount of votes. So in this case, this year, Trump, he won Texas. That's worth 38 Electoral College votes. Cool. They go into Trump's tally or Trump's basket. Biden won New York. Okay, cool. That's 29 Electoral College votes. They go into Biden's tally. And a candidate needs 270 Electoral College votes to win. That is the magic number, 270. And that's the number that we've all been focusing on for the last 5 days. So ever since the polls closed on November 3rd, that's all the world's been doing, is counting up who won each state and then how many Electoral College votes that state is worth, and waiting until one candidate surpassed 270, which is what Joe Biden did today, literally a matter of minutes before I sat down to record this podcast. And just for your reference, I'm recording this at, it is exactly 6:45 in the evening on Saturday the 7th of November. So we actually don't know all the results yet. We don't have the vote counts currently for Nevada, Arizona, Georgia, or Alaska, according to my CNN map. But it doesn't matter because Biden got over 270 Electoral College votes. So he won regardless, whatever happens with those remaining states. And Trump physically cannot beat him. Speaking of Trump, by the way, as you'll probably know by now, he is absolutely convinced that foul play was involved in this election, despite there being really, seriously, no evidence for that at all. We will talk about that in a sec. But first of all, let's just talk about the journey of how Biden got over 270 Electoral College votes and nabbed the overall win. All right, so a big part of the journey for, you know, Biden winning is the fact that it took so long. And everyone, you know, loads of you asked me, why did it take so long? And I had Julia, great name on Instagram, Julia get in touch with me to say, hang on, let me get her question right. Yeah, why did it take so long for Nevada, Pennsylvania, Georgia, etc. to announce their results in comparison to other states? So I'll give you a really simple answer rather than getting bogged down in it, but it's just to say that every state gets to separately and individually decide how it wants to go about counting its votes. And that means they all had different approaches to the sheer volume of people who voted by post because of the pandemic. Some states were like, right, let's just count these postal votes as they come in, even from before election day, so that we've got a head start and so that, you know, we can crack on when the in-person votes arrive. Other states were like, no, let's just do it all on the day. Let's hold off counting any votes until the 3rd of November. So Pennsylvania, as you asked about, Julia, Pennsylvania, which, I mean, fucking hell, it dominated our TV screens for the last 5 days, didn't it? That ended up being a pivotal state in determining Biden's victory, but it took so long to get there because they are one of the key states that held off before counting anything. And that meant when it came to November 3rd, they let all of the in-person votes pile up and then all the postal ones came through continuously, and they just kind of spent the following days drowning until they came out with the result. And if you compare that to Texas, for example, it was as if they were different countries because of the difference in their approach to how they should deal with this election. Texas is a massive state, so you'd think it would take ages to count all the votes, especially because turnout this year, just the sheer number of people voting, was so high. But it didn't. It was a really quick one. Its results came in on election night, and we knew that they'd voted Trump, you know, or the Electoral College votes for Texas had gone to Trump. We knew that on election night. And a big reason for that was because they simply didn't allow people to vote by post. Like, that's how different Texas' approach was to, say, California or Oregon, where they encourage you to vote by post. Everyone votes by post in Oregon and in Utah as well. Texas was like, nope, we're just not having it. Unless you've got a really, really extreme excuse, you need to vote in person. And by the way, being concerned about COVID didn't count as a massive enough excuse. It needed to be, like, ridiculously big. So they only had in-person votes in Texas, and only, you know, they only had mail-in votes from real exceptions, and that meant they were able to get through it really quickly on the day. As you can imagine, Texas kind of came under fire for that rule. During a pandemic, people were like, what the fuck? You're not going to let people vote by post. But as I say, each state is like its own separate country when it comes to counting the votes. They do it their own way. So with that question out the way, if we actually talk about election night, which feels like 3 weeks ago, even though it was, what was it, five days ago? Initially, I remember I watched it with my friend Elliot, who you'll hear from later on in this podcast. There were no massive surprises. All the safe states came in as expected. You know, your California, New York, Washington State, they all came in Democrat. And your Wyoming, Kentucky, Louisiana, all comfortable Republican states, they came in Republican, no surprises there. They were all also able to be called relatively quickly. The media were able to say, yep, California's voted Biden, there's no questions about it, and so on. So they all came in pretty quick, no surprises. And to be honest, even before the election, we all knew which way they were going to go before people even started voting. They were that safe. So it all came down really to the swing states. And I talked about what swing states are in the last podcast, but you know what I mean. These states that don't have a particular loyalty to one party necessarily. They've voted Democrat before, they've voted Republican before, so both parties thought they had a chance. And here's the thing, before Election Day, you might remember Biden in the polls was doing so well. Nationally, he was at like 52% and Trump was down at 44%. Quite a big gap, really. And most importantly of all, Biden looked to be ahead in most of the key swing states, most of which Trump had nabbed in 2016. So Biden looked ahead in all of those. So pre-election, you know, in the days running up to it, the Democrats were rubbing their hands and they were going, yes, we're going to take Florida, we're going to take Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, those lovely big chunky states with fuck tons of electoral college votes. Trump got them all in 2016, but we're going to get them back this year. And then on election night, I don't know if you guys stayed up to watch it, but as the votes started coming in, it was looking pretty bleak for Biden. His hopes kind of got pummeling after pummeling because the swing states that could get their vote counts in early because of their individual voter laws, they kept coming in for Trump, the ones that came in early anyway, so particularly Florida. I talked about that load in the last podcast, but it's worth about 29, not about, it is worth 29 Electoral College votes. And the Democrats truly thought they had a chance there, but it came in for Trump early doors. And that did kind of dash Biden's supporters' hopes because they thought, oh, Florida was going to be one of the keys to winning this election. The same thing happened with Ohio, another swing state that's worth quite a lot. It's worth 18. It came in for Trump pretty early doors. And Iowa, which is smaller, but still, it's a swing state and it came in for Trump. It's worth 6. And I was saying before that the Democrats were kind of looking at Florida as this key because we knew in advance that Florida's vote count rules meant that it would be called quite quickly. We would probably have an idea of how it went on election night. That did happen. We got, you know, the results from Florida pretty quick. And we knew in advance, everyone knew in advance, if Biden wins Florida, then he's probably going to win the election because it's worth so many Electoral College votes and it really will swing the whole result in Biden's direction. So if he wins Florida on the night, we know the result early, but he didn't win it. So then we knew, okay, it's going to be more of a wait. And I remember at that time, I think at like 6 in the morning, maybe half 6 in the morning, I decided to go to bed because I was like, okay, Florida's come in for Trump. We now have to wait on these swing states that have different voting rules. So they're going to take ages. So there's no point staying up for this. Let's just go to bed. I remember that. And then I kind of woke up at a normal time on November 4th and no real news. It was all still neck and neck. Until later that day, I'm talking UK time, later in the day on November 4th, Wisconsin came in for Biden. One of those states that had been a safe Democrat state until Trump nabbed it in 2016, but Biden took it back this year. And it's 10 Electoral College votes, so quite a chunk that Biden really did need. And then later in the day, the big boy, Michigan, it came in for Biden as well. 16 Electoral College votes. Again, like Wisconsin, it had been a Democrat state. It had been a Democrat state. It voted Trump in 2016, but Biden got it back. And that then kind of changed the narrative. It was like, okay. Biden might win this thing. If you follow me on Instagram, you'll know that from Michigan coming in for Biden, there was just this gap. There was this wait. And it did feel like the whole world was in limbo, waiting for the remaining swing states, which were Arizona, Georgia, Pennsylvania, which ended up being very pivotal. We'll talk about that soon. North Carolina and Nevada, waiting for those guys to come in. And everyone was just in limbo thinking, okay, Biden's much closer to that 270, depending on what map you're looking at, but he still was much closer than Trump to that magic number. He needs to either get one or a combination of the remaining states, and he's won this, but for days, everyone was just watching CNN and they just wouldn't come in. It was kind of soul destroying waiting for those remaining states to count up their votes. I've never seen so many memes, especially about Nevada. I don't know why Nevada got the brunt of all the jokes, but I remember seeing one where someone was like, can somebody send in the little, what is it? A little Dracula, the little counting Dracula from Sesame Street. Can someone send him in to Nevada to help with the count? Because my God, they need it. I did feel bad for them in that front. But, you know, as you'll remember, for a few days since Michigan came in, there was this kind of wait of how the fuck's this going to go. And then at about 5 p.m., our time in the UK, Pennsylvania called for Biden. And that was a shock because, and by the way, Pennsylvania is massive, 20 Electoral College votes. And by the map I was using, Biden was on 253, so he needed 17. And Pennsylvania was worth 20. So that tipped him right over the edge, gave him that 273 Electoral College votes, way over what he needed. In you go, you're the president-elect. Congrats. But I found that a shock. Of all the states to come in, Pennsylvania, really? I mean, it was a safe Democrat state, and then Trump took it in 2016, just like Michigan and Wisconsin. But Trump's lead in Pennsylvania had been so strong for days before that. But it didn't matter because those mail-in ballots, these are the key, you see. Everything about this election has been defined by the post because those mail-in ballots kept rolling in. It was relentless. And Trump's lead just got smaller and smaller. And it was like the tortoise and the hare, you know, Biden's this little tortoise catching up with Trump, who had galloped along originally and then just stalled. And Biden eventually just flew right past him. And then finally today, which is the 6th of November, Pennsylvania called and it pushed Biden over the edge. So there you have it. At the time I'm recording this, just so it's super clear, Biden, according to the CNN electoral map, he's on 273 Electoral College votes. We're still waiting for swing states. Probably by the time you hear this, some of them will have come in, but it doesn't matter because Biden got more than 270. That's all that matters. Trump physically can't beat him. There aren't enough Electoral College votes to go around. If one person gets over 270, the other person doesn't have a chance. And with Biden on 273, America has a new president come January. So that little kind of run through of the last utterly traumatic 5 days of everyone's lives, it did kind of make out like it was a smooth process. And both candidates kind of sat and politely watched as the states came in and announced for each candidate. And, you know, Trump just graciously stood by as Biden took the lead. But that is so not how it went. There was so much drama, mostly, again, over the fact that there were so many postal ballots. And it has led to lawsuits, recount demands, allegations of fraud and cheating. It's a lot. So let's just talk about that post-ballot debacle. Remember before the election, there was already this big disagreement between Biden and Trump on whether people should vote by mail. Biden was saying, look, do whatever suits you. Vote by mail if you can, because I think that's good in a pandemic. But if you want to go in person, go in person. Whereas Trump was like, don't vote by mail. because he, and he said this very openly, he was convinced that it was subject to fraud.
Show up and vote. You will determine the outcome of this election. Vote, vote, vote. If you're able to vote early in your state, vote early. If you're able to vote in person, vote in person. Vote whatever way is the best way for you, because you will. He cannot stop you from being able to determine the outcome of this election. And in terms of whether or not when the votes are counted and they're all counted, that will be accepted. If I win, that will be accepted. If I lose, that'll be accepted. But by the way, if in fact he says he's not sure what he's going to accept, well, let me tell you something. It doesn't matter, because if we get the votes, it's going to be all over. He's going to go. He can't stay in power. It won't happen. It won't happen. So vote. Just make sure you understand you have it in your control to determine what this country is going to look like the next 4 years. Is it going to change, or are you going to get 4 more years of these lies?
Mr. President?
As far as the ballots are concerned, it's a disaster. A solicited ballot, okay, solicited is okay. You're soliciting, you're asking, they send it back, you send it back. I did that. If you have an unsolicited, they're sending millions of ballots all over the country. There's fraud. They found them in creeks. They found some with the name Trump, just happened to have the name Trump just the other day in a waste paper basket. They're being sent all over the place. They sent two in a Democrat area. They sent out 1,000 ballots. Everybody got 2 ballots. This is going to be a fraud like you've never seen. The other thing, it's nice on November 3rd, you're watching and you see who won the election. And I think we're going to do well because people are really happy with the job we've done. But you know what? We won't know. We might not know for months. It's a fraud and it's a shame.
So that clip there was from the first presidential debate over a month before Election Day, where the candidates argued about mail-in voting. So this has already been an issue for a while. And like I said before, you heard Biden there saying, vote and do it however you want. Whereas Trump was saying, don't vote by mail, do it in person. Because if you vote by mail, you'll end up seeing ballots chucked in ditches. So unsurprisingly, I mean, literally no people are surprised by this. Nobody voted for Trump by mail. Most of the mail-in votes were for Biden and very few were for Trump because he told his supporters not to do it. So the loyal supporters that he had listened to him and they didn't vote by mail. And from that disagreement, we knew in advance that it was going to affect the way that the results came out because we knew that Trump's votes would be in person and therefore we knew that they would get counted up quicker than Biden's, whose votes we knew would be kind of split between in-person and mail-in ballots. By the way, you might be thinking, well, how come postal ballots took longer? How come they could get counted for days after the polls closed? And that's because in most states, as long as the posted ballots were marked with a postmark on or before polling day, so on or before the 3rd of November, they could be counted. Even if they arrived, you know, 2 or 3 days or a week later, they are still valid. So, you know, that's why you had batches and batches of ballots coming in for days after the polls closed, because mail was still arriving with the postmarks from the day, so it still counted. So everyone knew in advance that that's what would happen. We would see Biden's numbers shoot up because of continuous batches of mail arriving. And lo and behold, that's exactly verbatim what happened. Trump's numbers started off way better than Biden, even in those swing states that Biden ended up winning, like Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania. I mean, my God, Trump soared in Pennsylvania. Biden looked like a joke there. But Biden, knowing full well that his numbers were going to boost significantly once the states started counting the incoming mail ballots, he knew that. He got on stage during election night, kind of in the wee hours, to remind his supporters to sit tight. And to be honest, I think he made a conscious effort to address the public before Trump did. Have a listen to what he said on that night.
Good evening. Your patience is commendable. We knew this was going to go long, but who knew we're going to go into maybe tomorrow morning, maybe even longer. But look, we feel good about where we are. We really do. I'm here to tell you tonight, we believe we're on track to win this election. We knew because of the unprecedented early vote and the mail-in vote, that it's going to take a while. We're going to have to be patient until the hard work of tallying the votes is finished. And it ain't over till every vote is counted. Every ballot is counted.
So that was Biden kind of in the wee hours of the election night. And he does that. And then shortly after, Trump gets on stage. Again, loads of the states had not been announced. But Trump gets on stage and announces that he'd won. Like, nowhere near having 270 electoral college votes, but he gets on stage and he declares that he's won anyway. It was literally bonkers. Have a listen.
And we were getting ready for a big celebration. We were winning everything, and all of a sudden it was just called off. The results tonight have been phenomenal, and we are getting ready. I mean, literally, we were just all set to get outside and just celebrate something that was so beautiful, so good, such a vote, such a success. The citizens of this country have come out in record numbers. This is a record. There's never been anything like it. And all of a sudden, everything just stopped. This is a fraud on the American public. This is an embarrassment to our country. We were getting ready to win this election. Frankly, we did win this election.
So that was just odd. It wasn't in keeping with the etiquette of being a presidential candidate. You don't just announce that you've won when you don't even have a sniff of the amount of electoral college votes that you need. It's just, alas, not the done thing. Not that Trump's ever done that, but you know what I mean. And then, you know, things went from odd and weird to just bitter and nasty. Because as the tables turned and as Biden's numbers started shooting up in those swing states, Trump kind of just no longer believed what he was watching, or he refused to believe what was happening in front of his eyes. As I said before, you know, Biden took Wisconsin, and that was this turning moment. And then Michigan came in for Biden. And then his lead increased in Arizona and Nevada and even Georgia, actually. Can't forget that. Georgia is a Republican state. It hasn't voted Democrat since 1992, and Biden took over in Georgia. And from that, Trump was like, okay, no, that's where I refuse to believe what's happening. The Democrats are definitely cheating.
If you count the legal votes, I easily win. If you count the illegal votes, they can try to steal the election from us. If you count the votes that came in late, we're looking at them very strongly, but a lot of votes came in late.
So that was Trump there. I wasn't joking. He really did say that. And, you know, that was him addressing the media from the White House press briefing room. And again, that was a few days before the final result. But I think he just saw the way it was going and he just couldn't fathom it, because I'm not joking. He was way ahead and then Biden just shot up past him. And I think this was him in sort of panic mode. But here's the thing. Biden and his supporters and his kind of camp, they had the same message throughout this whole thing. I mean, it's been 5 days, it's been painful, but they stuck to their guns, simply saying, count all the votes. Count all of them. We'll wait. It'll be messy. It'll be uncomfortable, but that's the process. And we will just wait until there is an absolutely sure projection from the media that we've won. Whereas Trump and his camp and his supporters, their messages totally changed depending on where you were. I remember seeing videos published on the Thursday, so 2 days ago from when I'm recording this, Thursday the 5th, and they showed Trump's crowds, you know, crowds of Trump supporters shouting completely opposite messages in two different locations. So in Michigan, where Trump had been in the lead, in a serious lead, until Biden crept up on him and eventually closed the gap, Trump supporters were in Michigan shouting, stop the count, stop the count, as if to say, you know, if you keep counting, Biden will overtake, so stop. And then simultaneously in Arizona, where Trump was trailing behind, and then he started gaining on Biden. Granted, he didn't overtake him, but he did start gaining on him. Videos of Trump supporters in Arizona came out saying the opposite thing. They were shouting, count the votes, count the votes, as if to say, come on, keep counting and keep closing that gap. So you were kind of looking at them thinking, well, which is it, my huns? pick a message and stick to it. Naturally, neither chant actually affected what the vote counters were doing. It's a fucking democratic process. They have to count the votes. Just because supporters don't like what they're doing, it absolutely doesn't affect what they're going to do, which is continue with their jobs. Literally one of the craziest things I've ever seen in a supposedly democratic election. And that's just the thing, you know, I was talking earlier about etiquette. I don't know, do you say etiquette or etiquette? Anyway, that's the thing that's pissing off people, particularly kind of political commentators and people who have been in this world for a long time. There is a way of doing this. There is a way of doing presidential elections. As soon as it becomes, in lots of respects, but particularly on this, as soon as it becomes abundantly clear that a candidate is going to lose, and as soon as the media are all in sync projecting the same winner, the tradition is that the loser gives the winner a private phone call and they concede in private. So they have this cordial chat and the loser will generally say something along the lines of congratulations, you know, I'm going to do whatever I can to support you in your endeavour to run the country that both of us love and serve, or whatever, you know what I mean? They're going to say something cordial. Obviously, they're not pals, but it will be dignified. And then the loser, after that phone call, will make a speech to publicly concede. That happened in 2016. It's happened every year, but it happened in 2016 when Trump won. So he has been the recipient of that call when Hillary Clinton, you know, she gave him a ring and she said to Trump, you win, I lose. And then that allowed him to go on and make his victory speech on stage in New York at about 3 a.m. that night, which is crazy to think of an election being that quick, but that's how it was then. Simpler times, hey. But Trump in this instance is absolutely hell-bent on refusing to concede and insisting that he hasn't lost and that fraud has taken place. And if it wasn't for widespread conspiracies and cheating on the part of the Democrats, then he would have won. And it's just tough to get on board with his argument, because he's saying, his argument is, how come all of these mail-in ballots are suddenly changing the result? And it's like, well, because you told your supporters not to vote by mail. Okay, so along with refusing to accept reality, which we have discussed, and I'm sure I'm going to lose some followers over that, I already have. I've had some very angry people in my DMs, which fills me with joy, to be honest. But along with that, Trump is filing lawsuits, as we've heard. And yesterday, I caught up with Elliot, who you heard on the first episode of this podcast. He is my guy for explaining all things American politics. He's a journalist for an American network. And I wanted to ask him about this lawsuit issue and how it could even be a thing.
Hello.
Hello. So there's headlines everywhere that Trump is suing Pennsylvania, Georgia, Michigan. Can he do that? And if so, on what grounds?
Well, you're always entitled to challenge these things in the courts. The main thing so far, though, is that the actual content of these lawsuits is not really gaining any traction. Legal commentators are looking at this and thinking there's nothing tangible in there. So whatever might be out there on the internet, if that was genuine, they'd have included it in the lawsuits as evidence. No legal commentator, apart from those on Fox News, is taking this seriously. So lawsuits are basically just he's entitled to launch them, but if there was evidence of widespread voter fraud, they would be including it comprehensively in these lawsuits, rather than setting up a hotline where they have lawyers sitting in a room for people to call in and tell them anecdotal things just so they have something to cite. Obviously, there's, you know, thousands of people over the internet spewing all this, oh, there's this video shows this and this video shows that. If any of these videos were legitimate cases and they actually thought, right, this is demonstrable evidence of a widespread voter fraud, they'd be including them in relevant lawsuits, because they are filing lawsuits in pretty much every single state where Trump is losing. The other thing, I mean, worth mentioning with voter fraud is the Brennan Center for Justice has investigated voter fraud in recent elections and calculated the probability of voter fraud being committed across all ballots, not just mail-in, everything. Mm-hmm. 0.0003% to 0.0025%. Meanwhile, the Heritage Foundation, which is a conservative think tank, has investigated exhaustive research into instances of voter fraud since 1979 and found 1,298 proven instances since 1979.
Oh my God.
And that's across all types of election. Yeah, yeah. And so.
And Trump saying it's happening with millions of votes now.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
We're talking over the 40 years and billions of ballots, right? 1,298 instances.
I think people are confused about what Trump is annoyed about because it's very confusing. The message seems to change all the time. Does he think, I mean, I'm not asking you to speak on his behalf, but like, is the understanding that he thinks that the Democrats have conspired to rig the election by pumping fake ballots through, by dumping ballots that were meant for Trump in ditches and in bins? And does he think that the vote counters conspired with the Democrats, who are also, by the way, conspiring with the media, to make out like, we are stopping you from winning the election? Also, there's claims of like, you know, illegal immigrants are voting, dead people are voting. Is that his genuine thought?
All of that.
Okay. The Democrats would have to be like, so genuinely evil, and they'd have to be united in this evil to have pulled that off. But not just that, they would, with their evil, be quite stupid, because surely if they were going to rig the election, they would rig the Senate election. And they're losing that.
a claim multiple Democrats and commentators have said, like, if we are committing some sort of mass conspiracy, we kind of suck. No, he's not worried about mail-in ballots in Iowa or Ohio or Florida or Texas.
Because he won there.
Yeah, no issues.
Things like this have ended up in the Supreme Court before. Mm. Could this?
The thing is, with taking everything to court, you kind of know, and obviously they have to go to through district courts and state courts, you kind of know that if they do uncover anything that is tangible, it will make its way up the chain.
Yeah.
Right? So you never know. There might be like individual instances, but they're going to have to target kind of individual batches of ballots. And there's not, you know, actually proving that there's a conspiracy that encompasses enough ballots to make a difference is going to be very difficult based on what they are actually launching these lawsuits from.
But I think the thing that people are kind of looking on this, I mean, this election's already been so drawn out, I can't remember my own name. If people are looking at this and going, is he going to drag out lawsuits and drag it up to the Supreme Court and actually put off an inauguration of Biden because of the fuss? Is that possible?
No, I wouldn't say so. I mean,
okay.
The only, like, there's, unless they happen to come across something that is substantial enough for them to question the entire outcome, or key outcomes in major swing states.
I think some of it just feels like it's a last-ditch attempt to undermine Joe Biden's legitimacy. Like, even, you know, if the minute that Trump, whether it be he leaves by volition or he's escorted out the White House so that Biden can start, I just wonder if a lot of this is just to make sure that whatever victory Biden has is utterly tainted, and like there's still a huge swathe of the population who don't believe he deserves to be in the White House.
Yeah, that's essentially it. They want to sow the seeds so that, you know, Biden has any, it's like a mass unrest basically, so that anybody that supports Trump never comes round to accepting the result.
That was Elliot there. And to be honest, I'm probably going to try and get him back on any time I talk about American politics, because he's such a little politics nerd. He honestly will remember the most random and minute detail from like 1972. You know, he's your guy for that. But as he said, Trump is dragging his feet despite no credible evidence of voter fraud. And if they find some, sure, of course, if there is credible evidence that widespread conspiracy has taken place and Trump has been robbed of this election, of course it'll end up in the Supreme Court, and of course this will be a worthy challenge. But until then, Biden has won. You can't stop a guy from being president if he won. You know, a lot of you have messaged me. In fact, this might be the most common question I've had, asking, I'll shout someone out because I want to do that and I want to remember to do that. Okay, Fran, thank you for your question, Fran. So she messaged me on Instagram saying, if Trump kicks up enough of a fuss, can it stop Biden from becoming president, or can it at least push back Biden's ability to become president in January? The answer, Fran, is no. I'm serious, it's no. If Trump's team find no legal evidence of widespread fraud, which they won't, Biden will be inaugurated in January, do or die. And it really is that final, because Trump's team, Trump's staff in the executive, so who all work in the West Wing of the White House, will no longer have jobs in the White House. The taxpayers' money will no longer pay their salaries. They will no longer be staff. Their little cards to get in the building will no longer work. Security will no longer be allowed to let them in the building. And frankly, Biden's camp put out a statement addressing just this. I'll read it out to you because it's you know, pretty black and white. They said, as we said, this is the statement, as we said on July 19th, the American people will decide this election, and the United States government is perfectly capable of escorting trespassers out of the White House. So that's Biden's team saying, mate, if you're going to make this hard, when Biden's inaugurated in January, we'll escort you out. And that will be embarrassing for everybody. So if you want to play that game, let's play that game. And honestly, I was talking about this on my Instagram stories the other day, when people were asking me, you know, can Biden be prevented from entering the White House if the previous president refuses to leave? I compared this scenario to death. You can have an opinion about death and you can be annoyed by it, and you can declare publicly your annoyance at the reality of death, but it doesn't stop you from dying. Death doesn't care about your opinion. It doesn't slow down the process. Death is not, it's not a person that you can persuade. It is a reality. It is a time-conscious event. And even if you shout and scream and drag your feet and sue death, it will not stop. That's a really good way to think about this, frankly. Look, I've actually planned a whole segment of this podcast around talking about the other elections that were happening on the same day. So you might not be aware that on an American ballot, during an election, they're not just deciding who becomes president. There's a shopping list of things that they're deciding, including, you know, the Senate and the House of Representatives, which is kind of the equivalent to the American, you know, for us here in the UK, we've got the House of Lords and the House of Commons. Imagine that all three of those things, the presidency, the House of Commons and the House of Lords, are all being elected on the same day. Even though we don't elect our House of Lords, that's what's happening in America, alongside a whole load of other things. So in Oregon, for example, they had a vote on the same ballot as voting for their president to decide whether they wanted to legalize drugs for recreational use. So like if you got caught walking down the street with cocaine or heroin, should you go to jail? And Oregon voted in a majority that, yeah, let's legalize recreational drugs and let's not go down the path of kind of prosecution. Let's go down a rehabilitation path for people who get caught with these things. So now in Oregon, you get like a slap on the wrist. In the same way that you get a slap on the wrist for like parking in the wrong place. Literally, that's what they voted on the same ballot as their president and senator and, you know, district representative, even down to a state level. So each state has its own Senate and its own House of Representatives in a way. So all of that stuff is going on all at once. And I did want to talk about that, but I just kind of want to get this podcast out there. I want to answer these questions that I've talked about today, and then I'll cover those other ones on another podcast, or maybe on an Instagram post if I run out of time. But either way, make sure you're following me on Instagram at juliabell_x, and between this and that you'll get your answers. I wanted to, oh god, there's so many questions on here, shit, I really want to answer more of them, but I just want to get, oh actually no, this is a really good question. Ben on Instagram saying, what happens to Trump now? Can he run for president again? Ben, he can absolutely run for president again. And there's already talk of his team putting together a campaign for 2024. So when Biden's first term is up in 4 years' time, will we see another Trump campaign? I wouldn't be surprised at all. And there's already discussions of that. So The answer is yes. And that's all there is to say about that, really. I said in the last episode that I'm going to start a tradition where at the end of each episode, I'm going to give you a fact. It might be controversial. It might be interesting. It might be kind of just bizarre. So the fact this week, which is probably all three, to be honest, it's bizarre, interesting and controversial. This guy, he was a Republican called David Andel. He won a seat in the House of Representatives in North Dakota. Because remember I said that, you know, they weren't just voting for a president on the 3rd of November. They were voting for everything right down to state level and local level. So this guy, David Andel, a Republican, he won a seat in the state legislature of North Dakota, even though he was dead. I kid you not, I swear to God, in North Dakota, they voted for David Andel, who was dead, to sit in the state House of Representatives. And he died from COVID-19. Absolutely mental. He died a month before the election in early October. And now, of course, you know, the Republican Party is saying, look, we will find a replacement and we'll sort this out. But the fact that that even happened blows my mind. How do you vote for someone who's dead? I literally cannot wrap my head around that. But that is your fact for the week. And then my recommendation for the week, and my God, it's so good. Obviously, this week I've not had a huge amount of time, so I've not watched or read anything. But I wanted to make it about American politics and specifically about American political media, because you know how earlier I was talking to Elliot about Fox News? And I don't know if we mentioned this, actually, I can't remember, but Fox News have refused to acknowledge Joe Biden as the president-elect because they are so firmly in Trump's camp. They are absolutely of the belief that the Democrats have committed widespread voter fraud and therefore Joe Biden doesn't deserve the title. So Fox News have absolutely made their stance on this clear. And I really encourage you to watch a film that was made about Fox News and about the institution called Bombshell. It's not a documentary, it's like a feature film. And Charlize Theron plays the main character, but it's also got Margot Robbie and Nicole Kidman. And they all play these blonde bombshell news anchors at Fox News. In fact, Margot Robbie's kind of an intern character, but Nicole Kidman and Charlize Theron play these real-life anchors. Charlize Theron plays Megyn Kelly, who's actually this incredibly famous, pretty right-wing, you know, news anchor. And the story, I won't give too much away, but the story is about how messed up the internal workings of Fox were at that time. I mean, you could argue that they're pretty messed up now because they're refusing to acknowledge the result of a Democratic election. But definitely watch that film. The performances are absolutely amazing. And actually, even more fascinatingly, Megyn Kelly herself did on her Instagram a reactions video to the movie. So she watched the film and she kind of documented her thoughts and her reactions and how much of it was real. And it was amazing how much of it was real. Like, she went on to say, do you know what? Yeah, a lot of that happened to me. Really, really good, really interesting, and like a cool insight into what it's like to work for the right-wing media in the US. Cannot recommend it enough. And on that bombshell, I really didn't do that on purpose. I didn't plan that, I promise. I'm going to leave it there. If you liked this episode, if you found it helpful, please subscribe to the podcast and also to my Patreon page. I'll put the link to that in the episode description. Buy me a coffee, help support the whole process, and then it helps, you know, me keep this going and keeping you informed. Make sure you're following me on Instagram at @JuliaBell_X. I'm very active on there. And I will speak to you in the next one. Sorry, I have honestly now had like, I think 4 glasses of wine. So I think this is going to be a very giddy episode. Not at all looking forward to listening to it back. I might just not listen to it, but hopefully it helped you. And look, I'll speak to you in the next one. Okay, bye.